You are listening to RudolfSteinerAudio.com. If you are listening to the podcast of this, it is located at RudolfSteiner.podbean.com. Please consider becoming a patron. You are listening to RudolfSteinerAudio.com. This is a reading of a cycle of lectures by Rudolf Steiner entitled At Home in the Universe, Exploring Our Supra-Sensory Nature. This is Lecture 4, entitled Through Midnight to Birth, given in the evening on November 17, 1923. In the lecture earlier today, we looked at how our life between death and a new birth can be conceived of as a journey through spheres of the spiritual world. We saw, at the same time, how one can gain a perspective for this journey through certain spiritual regions in reference to the positions of specific stars. But before going further, let us look more closely at the nature of this passage through such areas marked by positions of stars. It might seem as though it would be enough to describe suprasensory human existence between two earthly lives only as it was presented in title Theosophy, for instance. Certainly, it is absolutely right to begin by becoming familiar with those realms in this way. But our knowledge must progress and expand. Thus, it is necessary to approach these matters in a way that includes the unity of the cosmos and the harmonious cooperation between the suprasensory and sensory worlds. And it may be said in this connection that the whole relationship of the various regions traversed between death and the new birth is also manifested in terms of spatio-temporal relationships between the stars. Therefore, we present a true picture by speaking of these spiritual regions in terms related to the stars. And it is true indeed that when, pointing to a star, we indicate a place to which we must refer in relation to any suprasensory region. It could be argued that what exists between death and a new birth cannot be thought of in terms of space, or perhaps only to a certain degree. This is perfectly true, but it does have something to do with space. Everything outside space and time plays into space and time. And because people must think and conceptualize in spatio-temporal terms, the imagery of the stars, once acquired, provides an excellent image of what lies beyond the senses. One thing, however, must be added. We learn in physics that processes in the physical world that are subject to gravity change out in cosmic space. Physicists report that gravity decreases in proportion to the square of the distance. The intensity of light also ebbs in the same proportion. But people refuse to admit one thing, that all knowledge derived from Earth about physical matters, such as gravity, light, and so on, is from this Earth. And though it applies to Earth and its immediate environment, it is plausible that it very well might lose some degree of validity out in space. We are thus justified in speaking of today's generally accepted knowledge as true only for Earth and its immediate surroundings. Just as gravitational force decreases in proportion to the square of the distance, so too the truth of our conclusions decreases as we move away from Earth. When an astronomer or astrophysicist, for example, uses ordinary thinking to determine what takes place in a spiral nebula out in space, it is like trying to calculate the weight of a stone, according to conditions on Earth, in a spiral nebula out in the heavens. Consequently, we should not be surprised when spiritual science tells us that matters look one way here on Earth and completely different out in the cosmos. Here the moon appears as we are used to seeing it, but in reality it is a cosmic community consisting of what I described in this afternoon's lecture. Those are the facts regarding the stars and constellations. We must keep this in mind as I describe the matters that now become the object of our studies. So far, the lectures have brought us to the point where we move into the sun sphere during our life between death and a new birth. In this region, the spirit form of the lower part of the human being changes into what the head will become in the next earthly life. We must remember, of course, that our path between death and a new birth takes us through all these planetary spheres twice. After death, we pass first into the moon sphere, then we go on into the spheres of Mercury, Venus, and the Sun. That is where we left off in our description. In the sun sphere, the lower human being begins to be transformed into the upper human, so that the limbs are transformed, at first spiritually, into what will be the human head organization. This metamorphosis is an infinitely grand and sublime work, and anyone who studies the human head only in a physical connection has no idea of all that must work together in the cosmos to bring about the spiritual model of this human head, a seed that then unites with the physical embryo. This work on the spiritual model of the head, which then acts upon the physical embryo, begins during the period after death that we spend in the region of the sun. After this work has been begun in the sun sphere, we go into the Mars sphere, then into the Jupiter and Saturn spheres. The Saturn sphere is really the last one that we then enter, since Uranus and Neptune do not enter our picture. During this whole time spent passing through these realms, we work on the spiritual archetype of the head. Our path then leads us even farther into the cosmic expanse, out into the vast cosmic ocean where metamorphosis continues until we begin our return path. Then, returning through the regions of Saturn, Jupiter, and Mars to the region of the Sun, we come again, finally, to the sphere of the Moon. We will hear more about this return path later, for now we will consider our experiences once our time in the region of the Sun is ended. Until we reach the Sun sphere, our experiences are connected most closely with ourselves. In the previous lecture, I told you about how we wear a countenance that expresses our good and bad qualities, and how this enables us to see others who are similar to ourselves. I also told you how we gradually change our spirit form and begin to resemble the beings of the suprasensory world, and how we are then able to view the beings of the third and second hierarchies. If we wish to describe human beings up to the stage of the sun existence, we must focus on and describe their spirit form. But once we enter the sun region, we experience something I refer to as living into cosmic music, or music of the spheres. We hear the meaning of all the interplay between the starry realms in the cosmic harmony and melody. This interactivity of the stars, which simultaneously expresses the interaction of the spiritual beings in these regions, ultimately evokes the phenomenon expressed as cosmic harmony and cosmic melody. It is primarily the life of feeling in its spiritual metamorphosis that is quickened and stimulated as we enter the sun existence. Our whole experience is like cosmic melody and cosmic harmony that vibrates through our whole being. At this stage of our life between death and a new birth, we do not need theory or anything that can be expressed in words. What we need is the universal feeling that fills our entire being, the melodious and harmonious quality with which the various cosmic beings work together. And now, something else occurs that clearly shows us the relationship of the two worlds, the physical sensory world and the suprasensory or extra-physical world. The moment we enter the sun existence and are approached by the melodies and harmonies of the spheres from every direction of the cosmos, we sense the last remnants of one of the most spiritual faculties we had during earthly existence, the last remnants of speech. Now, even our spiritual shape has fallen away during our journey between death and rebirth. We have become like the round sphere of the universe because our human form has been transformed into a head shape during our sun existence. In other words, everything about our spirit form that could remind us of earthly existence has fallen away. Now, the aspect of our earthly being that was expressed through our ability to speak and pour thoughts into the form of words, the soul meaning of our speech, crops up uncomfortably, at least as things are at present on earth, in the memory as a dissonant element in the cosmic music. A dissonant element actually enters the cosmic music because we carry a remnant of our speech capacities into our sun sphere existence. What we carry into this sphere becomes the basis for the work of certain higher beings whose task is to help the earth from their place in the cosmos. Above all, they see in human speech how earthly existence has decayed and degenerated. Human speech does not really develop out of us with elemental force in any of the current European or American languages. Perhaps the nature of what speech was at one time could manifest again on Earth, owing to the fact that some of us are learning eurythmy. What really happens when we learn eurythmy? Today a word is spoken casually, without the slightest idea of how its whole structure is related to our inner soul experience. Indeed, the way words are spoken today merely conforms to convention. People no longer give thought to the fact that by saying "ah" as a separate sound, they express the pure sound of the soul's awe and wonder. By speaking the sound "b," we imply that something is being covered, enveloped, or wrapped up. Consonants invariably refer to forms. Vowels always signify feeling. The inner essence of soul is represented by vowels, and form always by consonants. Consequently, B is primordially connected with enfolding. It is really a dwelling, so to speak, or little house. When I speak the sound of B, I signify enfolding. When I say ah, it expresses wonder in the very depths of my soul. The consonant sound of T expresses settling down, stopping, and lingering. The sound of D is a gentler stop. Suppose I say Bad, German for bath. If I go back to the word's origin, when it was truly felt and seen, I would say, "The water surrounds me as an enveloping sheath." B. It is comfortably warm. Ah. I am led to ah, and now I stay within it. D. This whole experience is contained in the word. Today, this kind of analysis is somewhat humorous, because people no longer experience words. If we want to experience the word Bat, we would say, "This dwelling where I feel wonder and in which I sit." Speech is indeed filled with soul experience. The inner experience of the human soul flows into and permeates it. Speech was once such that one could sense it in this way. In the original primordial languages, speech was all perception of feeling and form. The perception of feeling in vowels and form in consonants. Today this has fallen away, leaving only convention. Our way of life is such that words have become no more than memorized habit. In eurythmy, however, we transform the sounds b, a, d back into their corresponding gestures. In performing the gestures, a eurythmist must reclaim the experience of speech. One may hope that as more and more people come to love eurythmy, people will find their way back to a way of speaking that is felt and seen. This was the nature of the primordial tongues. In this way, eurythmy will eventually become much more than the new art it is now. It will become a guide to show human beings how the spiritual soul life may be carried on the waves and rhythms of speech. Now is a time when many people speak with such little articulation, let alone soul, that we can no longer really call it speech at all. People spit their words. In speech today, very little is born from the soul. There is real cause for despair in today's lack of soul and life in words, not to mention the failure even to articulate. So in our day, when human beings enter the sun existence after death, a shrill discord arises from earth into the music of the cosmos. And it is precisely this condition of speech that helps certain spiritual beings to recognize degenerate manifestations in earthly existence, and how to find the forces and impulses that can return to a kind of ascent. We continue our journey between death and a new birth, and thus enter the Mars existence. What does it mean to say that we enter Mars existence? At this point, we can no longer speak of a human spirit form, because now the human being has been completely transformed into a spiritual image of the great cosmic spheres. The path leads on and on, through the spheres of Mars, Jupiter, Saturn, and into the billowing waves of the cosmos. In the region of Mars, human beings experience the, in quotes, population of Mars. These inhabitants of Mars are revealed as either discarnate human souls or hierarchical beings, mostly those of the higher hierarchies, from whose entire being cosmic speech reverberates into space. Human beings have now arrived in the region where cosmic music becomes cosmic speech. At first they hear it, and then they become interwoven with cosmic speech themselves. Instead of the imitative human speech, they listen to creative speech, speech through which things come into being. This takes place during our passage through the Mars sphere. While we pass through the Mars sphere, we learn in a conscious way from the beings there. The spiritual population of the Mars sphere consists of beings who know the cosmic speech, along with other beings who are warlike, and so on. But human beings are concerned primarily with the beings of the Mars sphere who are in fact wholly cosmic word. These are the protectors of cosmic speech. Our journey then leads us into the region of Jupiter, where beings guard cosmic thought. These beings radiate thought entities into our planetary system and its environs. And now we pass through this region, in which we become involved in a metamorphosis that I can describe only in the following rather schematic way. Picture how human beings become a kind of image of the cosmic spheres, into a spirit model for the head of their next earthly incarnation. After we have learned from the shrill dissonance of the earthly speech in the sun existence to lay aside this earthly speech, we grow into the cosmic speech while passing through Mars. We receive there the first predisposition for understanding cosmic speech. After the described transformation has begun, metamorphosing our lower limbs, the legs into the lower jaw, the arms into the upper jaw, and so on, we work at first with the beings of the higher hierarchies, preparing the spiritual model of the head. But during this time, the head is being prepared to understand the cosmos, not the earth. And it first learns cosmic speech and cosmic thoughts. Cosmic thoughts and cosmic speech live into human heads there. And just as here on earth we know something about the mineral, plant, and animal kingdoms, so on our journeying through Mars and Jupiter do we know the mysteries of the spiritual cosmos. We develop the right feeling for what it is to be a human being when we become aware that as we pass through life between death and a new birth, we learn all the names of the wonderful, majestic beings of the higher hierarchies. Learn to understand what creative functions they perform in the universe. To form judgments not about how to get from The Hague to Amsterdam, but about how cosmic epoch emerges from cosmic epoch through the creative activity of the higher hierarchies, such as the transit through Jupiter. Next, we pass through Saturn existence. Saturn endows us with what we could call cosmic memory. Saturn is the cosmic region of spiritual beings who preserve the memory of all that has ever happened in our planetary system. Saturn is the grand repository of memories of all planetary events. In the Mars sphere, we learned the speech of the gods. And in the Jupiter sphere, the thoughts of the gods. Now, in our first transit through Saturn existence, we learn everything the gods of our planetary system remember. Thus, there is built into the spiritual archetype of our future earthly heads all that will prepare us to be citizens of the cosmos and to live among beings of the hierarchies, just as we live on Earth among the subordinate kingdoms of minerals, plants, and animals. Then, once we have been enriched deeply in our spiritual existence, to the degree that we understand the speech of the macrocosm, in the broadest sense of the word, we enter the region called the sphere of fixed stars. In this region there is no longer planetary activity, but the activity of fixed stars. There, work is done in the most profound sense, for the first time, with the cooperation of endless spiritual worlds, to bring together the elements needed for the primal archetype of the human head. Then we begin our return path, first into the Saturn sphere, which we can talk about tomorrow. Because we received the planetary memory into ourselves during our earlier transit through the Saturn sphere, a basis can now be established in the head for the faculty of memory needed in earthly life. Cosmic memory implanted into our being and made, in quotes, earthly. It is transformed into the capacity of human memory. And in the Jupiter sphere, on the return path, all that we acquired by perceiving the thoughts of the gods becomes our capacity for understanding human thoughts, reflected by ordinary consciousness, once the spiritual archetype of the head has joined with the archetype of the physical embryo. Now, however, during our return through Saturn, a detailed plan can take place for the metamorphosis of the lower human into the various parts of the head. This is a wonderful activity. One human being works on another in harmony with the beings of the higher hierarchies. Truly, the work accomplished here, in forming the human head, is not unlike creating a whole universe. In the sphere I am now speaking of, as the existence between death and rebirth, every individual human head is seen as a wonderful world, one of infinite variety and detail. And this work requires the devotion of human beings linked by destiny, along with the cooperation and necessary effort of hierarchical beings who understand, out of the mysteries of the cosmos, how to form the human head. It is indeed wonderful to learn in this way about how we are constituted as human beings. Such knowledge cannot lead to pride or conceit. The world in which we live between death and a new birth prevents us from developing conceit. It would be absurd to fall prey to human delusions of grandeur among beings of the hierarchies, the seraphim, cherubim, and thrones, because we always remain small compared to those beings with whom we create. In earthly existence, when we discover our nature in relation to the grand cosmic macrocosm between death and a new birth, we have good reason to remind ourselves of how little we really brought with us into earthly existence. We have very little cause to be proud of our present condition, nor can we be very proud of the way we were among the gods. By seeing what happens to us between death and a new birth, we can assess the true meaning of our humanity according to the work of the gods on us between death and rebirth. And we can gain a real sense of our responsibility and the tremendous effort we need to make to be worthy of our human status on earth. Now, along our path of return, we re-enter the Mars existence as the work on our being continues. The spiritual archetype for the structure of a new body is added, the chest and limb organization for our next earthly life. It is indeed true that the basis for the limbs in the previous earthly life now emerge as the basis for the head in the next incarnation. During our journey through the starry world, on the way to the next earthly life, new seeds are generated for the chest and limbs. The nature of this preparation is, of course, spiritual. As we pass through Mars again, what we acquired as the most sublime spirituality during our first passage through Mars that gave us the capacity to understand the cosmic word now becomes somewhat lower spiritually. It is transformed into a spiritual substance that later becomes the human I-being. Also during our return through this sphere, the spiritual archetype for the larynx and respiratory system is added. Then we come again to the sun existence. This second journey through the sun sphere is extremely significant. Since our first sojourn in the sun existence, we passed through the spheres of Mars, Jupiter, and Saturn into the realm of the stars, and now we return through Saturn, Jupiter, and Mars. During this whole time, our entire being has been surrendered to and united with the cosmos. We have lived in the cosmos and learned cosmic speech. We have learned to weave cosmic thoughts into our being. We have not lived in our own memory, which comes to life later for us, but in the memory of the whole planetary system. We have felt united with the beings of the higher hierarchies in the memory of cosmic thoughts and cosmic speech. Now, we return to the sun existence, where we begin to withdraw again to become separate individual beings. There is a vague, dawning feeling of separating from the cosmos. This is because the archetype for the human heart is now being established within us. The return journey continues as we pass through the Venus and Mercury spheres for the second time. There, the spiritual archetypes of the remaining organs are planted within us. After our second transit through the sun sphere, and such transits can span long periods of time, and well before we re-enter earthly existence, a highly significant turn of events takes place. On our return journey to Earth through the cosmos, we prepare the spiritual seed of the heart. This heart is not, of course, merely the form for a physical heart, though it has been indicated. It is a form enveloped by and interwoven with our entire worth as individual human beings, as a result of prior earthly lives. The most important thing is not that we receive the archetype of the physical heart into ourselves in the sun sphere, but that this heart seed concentrates our whole moral being, our qualities of soul and spirit. This is all concentrated in the human heart. Prior to the uniting of the archetypal heart with the embryonic foundation of the future body, the cosmic heart is a spiritual and moral soul entity within us. We then unite this spiritual and moral soul essence, which we acquire and experience as we return to earth, with the archetype of the embryo. This concentration of our spiritual and moral soul nature is experienced by us in concert with the sublime beings of the sun, who oversee the creative forces of the whole planetary system and consequently our existence on the earth. Allow me to use an image to describe this to you. The impressions may sound strange, but they are appropriate. When we are given this cosmic heart, we are surrounded by the spiritual beings of the hierarchies who direct the whole planetary system in relation to earthly existence. Here, our attention is drawn to something absolutely magnificent and marvelous. It is difficult to describe what the human being experienced during this phase. In a certain sense, it is not unlike the way we feel in physical existence. In physical existence, we feel intimately connected with our heartbeat and the heart's activity as a whole. Likewise, through our microcosmic spiritual heart, we feel united with our whole being of soul and spirit. The moral being of soul and spirit that we have become at this moment of experience is a, quote, spiritual heartbeat, close quote, within us. Our whole being thus seems to be in the cosmos, just as our heartbeat is in us. We sense our whole being in the cosmos like our own heartbeat, and we feel a kind of circulatory process connected with it. On earth, we feel the blood's circulation in our heartbeat and our breathing in relation to it. Similarly, on our return journey through the sun existence, if I may express it in such an image, we feel the beat of our spiritual macrocosmic heart, and we feel as though currents were flowing from there to beings of the second hierarchy. Just as in the physical organism, our blood flows to the heart from the veins, likewise the words of exousiae, curiotities, and dunamis pour into our spiritual soul being, now located within us. All that they say about the cosmos and cosmic judgment of human beings. The spirit of the cosmos, its words and its tones become the circulation concentrated in this spiritual macrocosmic beating heart, the spiritual and moral soul of a human being. It is our spiritual human heart beating. At the same time, however, it is also the heartbeat of the world itself, the world we are in. And there, the works and forces that flow from the creative beings of the second hierarchy are experienced as the bloodstream. The human bloodstream is concentrated in the heart so that we can sense it subconsciously. The heart is indeed a sense organ for perceiving the blood's movement, not a pump, as physicists claim. The coursing of blood is brought about by our spirituality and vitality. Likewise, during this period of our life between death and a new birth, we are graciously privileged to bear within us one of these perceptive organs, a cosmic heart created from the macrocosmic pulse that springs from the activity of the second hierarchy. Our return journey continues through the spheres of Mercury and Venus. First, however, at the cosmic moment when we may truly sense that we are within the spiritual cosmic heart, we view the lineage of generations, ending with the parents to whom we will be born. Thus we are connected with our ancestral line relatively early. We are born of a father and a mother who each have a father and a mother, and so on, looking back about 100 years. But we must go even farther back, through several more centuries, because long before our birth on earth, we will have united with the genetic line that culminates with our next family. We determine our connection with that family line very early, while passing through the sun existence I have described. In our transit through the cosmic communities of Venus and Mercury, we are able to determine somewhat our destiny so that it aligns as closely as possible with the circumstantial conditions we must experience through birth within a particular family and nation. Then we re-enter the moon sphere. Please recall that during our first transit through the moon sphere, our thoughts were directed toward the primordial sages and to Earth, in terms of both evil and good, back to the beginning of Earth's existence, when suprahuman teachers imparted superior wisdom to earthly human beings. Now, as we enter the moon existence for the second time, our attention is drawn less toward ancient earthly events. The time we spend in this cosmic moon existence corresponds to the time between earthly conception and birth. Thus, the life of the human embryo is accompanied by a certain cosmic development. In the moon sphere, we pass through a certain phase of evolution. While on Earth, there is a step-by-step preparation of the physical embryo with which we gradually unite. And what are we doing in a macrocosmic sense during this second moon development? In all of the experiences I have described thus far, human consciousness is much more clear and awake than ordinary consciousness during earthly life. It is tremendously important to be perfectly clear about the fact that dreaming consciousness is dull and waking consciousness is bright, and that our consciousness after death is even brighter. Our whole life here on earth is dreamy compared to the brightness of our awareness after death. Furthermore, with each new stage of life after death, consciousness becomes clearer and more alert. When we first ascend through the moon sphere, our consciousness brightens because we enter the environment of the wise primordial teachers of humanity. On our passage through the Mercury and Venus spheres, it grows brighter still. It thus becomes brighter with every entrance to another starry realm. During our return earthward, however, our consciousness goes through a corresponding sphere-by-sphere dimming. Although as we reach Mercury, it is still brighter than in ordinary earthly life. But then we enter the moon region. In this environment, we are shown what we were as human beings at the beginning of earthly evolution. Our consciousness is extinguished when we return to that sphere. There we experience the first illumined view of the suprasensory world, in a state of consciousness brighter than any we can have on Earth. And on the return to Earth, our consciousness is dimmed to the point where it serves as no more than the forces of growth in a dreamy little child. Our consciousness has dimmed to a dreamy quality. Only then is it possible to unite what we have developed as our spiritual soul being with the embryo. Because of the single fact that we can have this necessary connection with the physical embryo, we develop in the moon sphere, in the company of the primordial teachers of humanity, for a period that parallels the 10 lunar months of embryonic development in the mother's body. This moon development involves the cooperation of an entire community of those teachers in reducing the consciousness we possessed on Mercury to the dreamy level of our re-entry to earthly existence. We can understand the physical human being. we see here on earth only through insight into the suprasensory nature of the human being. Our suprasensory being can never be comprehended through earthly information, but only through spiritual knowledge of the macrocosm. Thus far, our lectures were intended to show how we as earthly beings must be born from the cosmos as spiritual human beings. In tomorrow's lecture, we will look at the significance of earthly life itself, inasmuch as this suprahuman being enters earthly life. And we will come to understand why we leave it again and pass through the gate of death, taking into the spiritual world all that we acquire during our life here. Now that we have become acquainted with some aspects of our spiritual suprasensory being, tomorrow we shall return and consider the relationship between the suprasensory and physical human being. The end of Lecture 4.